From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Yes, thank you very much, Ollie Barrett. So the Stones at Old Trafford last summer, they were brilliant. The Stones, eh? Can't beat the Stones. Welcome to the Richie Allen Show for Monday, April 29th, 2019. Hope you had a gorgeous weekend. Lovely day today. And the weatherman, or weatherwoman, is promising another scorcher this coming bank holiday weekend. Yes, there's another bank holiday this coming weekend. Thanks be to Jesus.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
You blasphemer, you!
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
I'll be speaking with John Kitson this hour. You might not have heard of John. He's a 5G awareness campaigner. Interesting man. He's lived in Tokyo. He's taught English there, as far as I can tell. He's going to be in Oldham this coming Saturday, and an old friend of mine, Angie Wright, gave me a shout and said, Richie, you should feature John. Looking forward to that. We'll talk all things 5G. We'll come at it from maybe one or two different angles than we normally do. John Kitson this hour. And in the second hour, the oldest podcast on the web. Maria Heller joins the programme live from Arizona. We'll have a look at the biggest stories of the day, and we'll focus on one or two big stories across the pond in the US. It is the Richie Allen Show. It is Monday. It is live on Fab Radio 2, triggerwarning.tv, TuneIn Radio, of course, and my own website, richieallen.co.uk. Yes, and the Avengers Endgame has broken all box office records this weekend just gone. The Avengers. I'm a bit of a snob when it comes to films, you know. I'm a bit of a snob. First of all, I think the advent of the multiplex has destroyed cinema, as an art anyway. Film is no longer an art. My great friend Jean-Anne Crowley, who has been in amazing productions on stage and screen, would probably disagree. But the advent of the multiplex destroyed film. And the propensity of studios to make never-ending comic book films has contributed to destroying films as well. I couldn't give less of a shit about The Avengers or any of these films. Couple of spoilers coming up for you, though. I'm going to ruin it for you if you haven't seen it. Scarlett Johansson is pretty fetching in a cat suit. There you are. And so is that girl who plays Captain America. There you are. Is it Captain America? I have no idea. Anyway, are you in good form this Monday? Two good guests. A lot of good guests coming up this week. Mark Windows returns to the programme this week. Looking forward to that later on in the week. Mark will join us. Lana Lochteff from Red Ice Radio joins the programme this week as well for the first time. Looking forward to that as well. And who else? And a friend of mine who was on this programme over a year ago, Sharon Gale, who had a story to tell that touched you. I know it touched you. We'll be back to refresh not just that story, but give us an update on her story. This is about forced adoption. But also, we'll be talking, Sharon and I, about other cases, women that she's been meeting over the last year who've got stories to tell about forced adoption, because it's a massive issue. So, busy old week on the programme. I'm looking forward to it. Now, right, I know this is covered all the time on this programme, but it has to be, because it's too serious not to cover it. The Minister for Health in Ireland is a man called Simon Harris, and he wants to make vaccination mandatory in Ireland. And he wants children, well, he wants to look into the possibility of banning children from attending school unless they are vaccinated. This has been covered in the Irish Times over the last couple of days. And as this programme has a very healthy listenership in Ireland, you should be listening to this, and you should be talking about it, and you should be trying to do something about it. Doctors need to tackle vaccine hesitancy, said Simon Harris. We need to be clear that if you have a young baby and the baby is too young to receive their vaccination, that young baby is at risk if another older child hasn't received their vaccination. This is the hysterical claim that if you haven't been vaccinated, you represent not only a threat to those who haven't been vaccinated, but those who have been vaccinated as well. He's gotten into that, this herd immunity thing. He says it's irresponsible and reprehensible to send your child without a vaccination to a school where they could spread diseases. He said he was grappling with the question of how best to deal with the issue in Ireland, and he wanted the Oireachtas to speak with one voice on this issue. In fact, he attacked one or two Irish politicians who have been expressing concerns about vaccine safety around, of course, Gardasil. So he has contacted the Irish Attorney General, and he has asked the Irish Attorney General, a man called Seamus Wolfe, to ascertain if it was possible to introduce legislation to oblige parents to have their children inoculated. Mandatory vaccination. The state telling you, you have no choice. You must, like it or lump it, inoculate, inject your child. Right? Right. Right. Okay. Russia Today has been looking at this as well. They had a debate on the issue on their platform, on their programmes over the weekend. Peter Openshaw is a professor at Imperial College in London, and he debated Dr. Jonathan Kennedy from Queen Mary University. Let's first of all hear from Peter Openshaw, because he does not like the idea of mandating vaccines for children. Peter Openshaw.
Making people have compulsory vaccinations, I don't think, is the way forward. I think that we need to educate people, we need to engage respectfully with people who don't want to have vaccines, explain why we should have vaccines, and then move forward in that direction. I think compulsion is just counterproductive.
Short and sweet, compulsion is counterproductive, said Peter Openshaw. Let's hear from Jonathan Kennedy. He's a doctor from Queen Mary University. And Jonathan, well, he's a bit scary.
We both agree that vaccines are an incredibly effective public health tool. And, you know, if we go with the WHO, they estimate that they save something like 2 to 3 million lives a year. And if vaccine coverage was increased, they could save a further 1.5 million lives each year. And with regard to my colleague's point, I guess this is a interesting question in political philosophy. You know, to what extent can the state, or should the state, interfere in the lives of the individual?
And what extent should the state be enabled to interfere in the lives of the individual? Where do we say that it's okay for the state to insist that you are injected with something you don't want to be injected with? He's scary, this guy.
And I think my opinion is that because this is parents making decisions that are, you know, to do with the health of not just their young children, their one-year-old child, but also children who can't be vaccinated because of their compromised immune system or because they're too young. So we talk about herd immunity in public health. So we talk about needing a vaccination rate of over 95% in order to make sure outbreaks can't occur in the population. And so when we don't have this, these vulnerable children, the youngest, and also the children who have compromised immune systems, so children who are undergoing chemotherapy and things like this, they suffer as well. So the most vulnerable people in society become more vulnerable when they're...
This is how they're selling this lately. This is the latest thing. There are children who are too young to have vaccines, and there are others whose immune system has been compromised by some other, maybe congenital illness. They can't have vaccines either, so they're at risk. Therefore, you should have a vaccine so that you don't give this tiny, 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 tiny percentage of the population the measles. There you go. That's basically what he's saying, right?
More vulnerable when the state doesn't legislate for this.
So then surely the answer is by effectively making people do it then, yes?
Make people do it.
I would say so, and I think my own research shows that there's a link between populism and increasing support for populist parties and also vaccine hesitancy, so parents who don't want to vaccinate their children.
Populism and all of that. There you go. Kennedy from Queen Mary University says yes, it should be introduced, it should be mandatory, and it's all about protecting those who can't have a vaccine. It is batshit crazy, but nobody in the media, even the so-called alternative media platform RT, which isn't really alternative at all, really, is taking it on and talking about the vast amounts of money involved here. You know, isn't taking on who exactly is on the board or the various boards of the World Health Organization and how many of those people used to work for Merck and for Glaxo and all the others. Don't talk about that. So what about Peter Openshaw again? The doctor, the professor, I should say, from... Where's he from, this professor again? Where's Peter Openshaw? Imperial College in London. He doesn't think it should be mandated, but he's a bit weak, really.
I mean, I think we should acknowledge that it's not only vaccine hesitancy and misinformation which is causing low vaccination rates. It's also the problems of having a really good health service, of being able to get people in the right place at the right time. You know, life is complicated. We can't just mandate that everyone has to line up and be vaccinated. I think that would just not go down well with the population.
Well, that's an understatement there, Peter. I don't think it would go down well with the population either, but it is inevitable. We are approaching a time when adults are going to be asked, did you have the measles jab? I did. When did you have it? When I was a child. Well, we're going to ask you to put something under your tongue. When you do that, you might have a rash on your arm, you might not. If you don't have a rash, it means your immunity has worn off. You have to have a vaccine or you can't work here. That's coming down the line as well. So you have the Irish Health Minister saying to the Irish Attorney General, please find it within yourself to come back to me with a legal way forward to mandate vaccines in Ireland. There you go. MPs have been debating today, and they've not been debating Brexit. You might remember the petition launched by the glamour model Katie Price. Do you remember that? The petition that urges the government to make online abuse a specific criminal offence. Remember that? And also to create a register of offenders. You might remember that. Now, Price, Katie Price, had a lot of support. She has a son, Harvey. Not so young anymore, Harvey. I think he's in his late teens. And he's disabled, Harvey is. God love him. He's blind. And Price was horrified by the abuse levelled at Harvey online, Twitter and what have you. So the petition she launched has had a lot of support. It's been debated today. There was a committee set up, the Committee on Online Abuse and the Experience of Disabled People. And they're looking into the following questions they're debating today. What's the impact of online abuse on people with disabilities? Who's responsible for protecting people from online abuse? Are the tech companies doing enough? How well does current law protect disabled people from online abuse? And does that law need to be changed? And so on, so on, so on, so on. So I want you to hear from a couple of people. Ciara Lawrence represents the mental health charity MenCap, and she has a learning disability. And have a listen to Ciara. She thinks it should be a criminal offence to level any sort of abuse at somebody online.
Yes, I think it needs to be made a criminal offence. I have a learning disability myself, and I've been bullied online in the past before, and it's really upsetting, and people just don't understand that you have a learning disability. So I think something needs to be done. I think social media companies need to have easy, clear guidance on how to join social media platforms, and they need to have easy, clear guidance on what happens if something goes wrong.
Ciara, could you give us an insight into the kind of abuse you've received and how it's affected you?
Yes, posts on Twitter, posts on Facebook, not saying very nice things, and it's really upsetting. So a few years ago, I had something where someone just reacted to something I said, and it got quite bad. And in the end, I had to have lots of support to deal with it. And it scared me off using social media after that. But I had good support from my colleagues and my friends and my family. But now I've learned to be a bit more careful, but there does need to be good support. But it needs to be tackled by social media companies actually saying, that when you join something like Facebook or Twitter, there needs to be clear, easy guidance rules about what you can say, what you can't say, and how to cope with something if it goes wrong.
Yeah, Kira Lawrence from MenCap there. She has a learning disability and was abused online. Sky's got a policing analyst called Graham Wettone, and Graham Wettone kind of lays it on the line here that this is wrong, first of all, the idea that you should criminalise name-calling or abuse on the internet, but that it'll be fairly impossible for the police to deal with, considering all the other resource issues that the Metropolitan Police have. This is Graham Wettone. He's a Sky News policing analyst.
That's the difficulty for policing. Which stage? Where's the threshold? Where's the line for what's abusive, offensive to you or me or Kira? Mm. People have different values, different requirements, etc. when you're online. It comes down to the social media companies managing their own house first of all. There are offences already under the Malicious Communications Act and the Communications Act of 2005 that make it an offence to post stuff. But sometimes evidentially, or to prove this, you've got to prove the person either meant it to be offensive, insulting, or they were aware of it. And that becomes, you've almost got to prove someone's intent, what's in their mind, which becomes difficult to prove it. There's an expectation from the victims that if it's a criminal offence, that the police will do something and someone will be either charged or there'll be some sort of result from it. So for me, regulation, self-regulation with the companies should come first before we talk about making it a criminal offence and putting another burden on the police to do an investigation, which can be quite lengthy. You've then got to go and find out who's posted this, which again, you're back to the companies again to find out who it is that owns this account. And that's the difficulty. A lot of these accounts are very anonymous and hosted elsewhere.
Yes, I'd be careful. I think anybody with a heart, or even half a heart, would be careful when speaking with somebody who's got a learning disability or somebody who might have suffered from depression or whatever. But the upshot of this is, how could anybody be, first of all, offended, or second of all, hurt or injured in any way by somebody using an anonymous name or a pseudonym or a handle, calling you names, insulting your looks or your disability, excuse me, or your political party of choice, or whatever. It amazes me that when we have these debates, when they have these debates on national television news channels, nobody says, look, at the first sign of abuse and name calling, just roll your old mouse cursor on over to the block button there. I know it's not a button, it's a drop down, and you block. Somebody calls you an effing this or an effing that. Now, I don't block people for that, because I just don't care. I'm very thick-skinned, having grown up the way I grew up and came up. So I don't care about what people say. But some people do. That's all right. But you don't have to introduce legislation and talk about criminalising it and talk about jail sentences, which some people have been advocating today. Just roll the old cursor on over there to mute, or block, meaning you don't see the comments or the tweets by that person ever again. It's very, very simple. And surely that's the only advice you would give to a child. Not that you want your child spending much time on Twitter or on Instagram, but it's fairly basic. You don't know that person. They can't possibly hurt you. Sticks and stones and all of that. Mute or block. And then let me know and I'll have a look and see what it's all about. Couldn't be simpler. But of course, the implications of this and the real reason for these discussions and these committees are far more sinister, because the powers that be, let's call them the powers that be today and not the cabal, not the hidden hand, they don't care about Kira Lawrence, the young woman who works for MenCap. I'm sure she's a lovely woman. They don't care about her being hurt or injured on Twitter. They don't really want to protect her from trolling. What they want to do is to be able to have total control over what is seen and what isn't seen on social media. And this is the in. This is the way to do it. By, again, identifying a number of vulnerable people who need to be protected, and we know just how we can protect them, by introducing laws. And while this is going on today, the UK Health Ministry is meeting today again to talk about vaccination and how to stop the misinformation about vaccines on the internet. Join the dots. It's all there for you today. Came across a story today that made me laugh, but I won't get into it. The actress Zoe Saldana said that her husband and her are raising their three sons in a gender-neutral household so the sons don't grow up believing in sex-based stereotypes. This is the older age now, isn't it? And you're not surprised that it's being embraced by, I can never pronounce it, the bourgeoisie. Yeah, you know what I mean. And Hollywood is at the forefront of this. She talked about this last year, did Saldana. She said that she does a lot of male things to break away from her husband doing them, like fixing the TV. She said, we're raising our children in a gender-fluid household. I think it's important to raise boys in that environment and the girls as well. Well, when one of her boys takes a rifle to the roof of his high school in 10 years, we'll know pretty much who's responsible for that then, won't we, eh? Won't we? 24 minutes past the hour. This is the Richie Allen Show. It's Monday's show. How you doing, eh? My name is Richie Allen. This is Europe's most listened to independent radio show. You too, Angel of Harlem. Welcome to the show. Yes, I know Bono is in the Illuminati. Bill Clinton did a show on that last year, The Grooming of Bono. That was 1989. We can say that was before The Grooming. Angel of Harlem on the Richie Allen Show, 26 and a half minutes past the hour. Welcome to the programme. Was reading the New Musical Express, because I'm old enough to remember that, the NME, which I think is predominantly read online these days, and they featured an article this week or last week about 5G, because apparently those attending Glastonbury, the Glastonbury Festival this year, or some of those attending it, have been raising concerns about 5G, because 5G apparently will be in operation at Glastonbury this year, this summer, right? So NME did a story this week. EE, one of the mobile providers in the country, said, don't worry about it, everything is hunky-dory. Now, if you listen to this programme regularly, you will remember me reporting about 4 weeks ago or 5 weeks ago on the Belgian Environment Minister, a woman called Céline Fremont, because she halted a trialling of 5G in Brussels, saying the people of Brussels are not guinea pigs whose health I can sell at a profit. We can't leave anything to doubt. So a pilot project was suspended temporarily. Now, I've been trying to follow that up and see what's happened there. Have they set a new date for the trialling of it in Brussels? But I've not been able to find out too much. Maybe my guest will know more about it than me. Now, Angie Wright, an old pal of mine who's based in Manchester, gave me a shout last weekend and said, Richie, you need to get John Kitson on your programme. He's a 5G awareness activist and he's coming to Manchester this coming weekend. He'll be in Oldham on Saturday. I'll tell you more about that in a minute. His own story is very interesting. He's been teaching in Tokyo. He's an English teacher and he's spent quite a bit of time this year travelling around the country giving people a different perspective on the environmental and personal health impact of 5G technology. Because as you know, if you're watching Sky or the BBC or ITV News, when they talk about 5G, there isn't any discussion ever about the possible health implications of it. Let's welcome John Kitson to the programme. John is in Torquay, I think. Welcome, John. How are you doing?
Hi, Richie. I'm fine, thanks. Nice to speak with you.
Nice to speak with you. Interesting background. You're in Tokyo and you were teaching English there, I believe. Is this where 5G began for you, John? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, I had a smart meter installed on my apartment and I started to have sleep problems. And the problem in Japan is that they'll actually install it outside of your flat. They won't actually ask you permission to come in and install it. So I started having sleep problems. So I moved to a place that didn't have a smart meter, started to sleep a lot better. And that's when I started to investigate it. The only other reason was that my mother passed away a few years ago and she had one of these wireless deck phones and it was giving her headaches. I didn't realize it was due to the phone and she passed away from a brain tumor.
Oh, John, I'm sorry to hear that. And there's no doubt that the device, you reckon, played a part in the brain tumour?
Yes, since that occurred, I've actually bought myself an Acousticom 2, which measures radio frequency, microwave radiation, and they give off a lot of radiation, as do the smart meters, as do the cell phone towers, and as do our smartphones.
Wow, John. Well, look, that's so your mum's experience, and a dreadful experience for you, of course, you being in Tokyo, then putting it on the outside of the building. This is a good bit of public service broadcasting now, because I've been looking into your rights as a citizen in the UK when it comes to 5G, and gladly I've discovered that the rental market, and most of us can't do anything but rent, if you do move into a house and you're renting it and there is a smart meter present, you can have it removed. If the landlord says yes, go ahead and have it removed, the provider must take it out at your request once you have the landlord's permission. Now, I understand that to be true, right? This is important because people have been asking me this. Richie, if I rock up to a house, there's a 5G meter there, excuse me, a smart meter there. If I don't like it, I can have it moved. That is true.
That's correct. There's no legal obligation to you for you to have one, and you can refuse one, but often the salespeople on the other end of the line will say, look, you know, that they're becoming compulsory now. There's been a lot of false information given to people. They don't have a legal obligation to have one, and they can have them removed. And there's a Facebook page, Smart Meter Health Effects, where Kathy Dowd is diligently educating people on how to get their smart meters removed.
What did you think when the Environment Minister in Belgium, Céline Vermeulen, came out and said, we're going to suspend this? This was obviously welcome. I did mention in the introduction, I've not been able to do any follow-up to find out, well, what's happened in the interim period. It was good news, but it would be interesting now to see what they plan to do, whether they suspend it full stop or whether they start that pilot project in the future. Have you heard anything, John?
Well, I've heard that, you know, in a number of places, there's an article that came out, I think it's called The Dominoes Are Starting to Fall, and it mentioned Brussels, it mentioned Rome, it mentioned Switzerland, and I think this is promising that we're hearing this resistance, but I think we have to keep going, and we shouldn't let our guard down.
Absolutely right. So you came back from Tokyo then, and you've been, what was it like there, John, before we carry on? Because it's a technological dystopian type of place, isn't it? I've never been to Tokyo, but I've known one or two people who've been to the Far East, and they say that Japan, it's an assault on the senses, and it might be several years further down the road in terms of people embracing tech than we are. Is that true?
Yes, I think so. I see more people on their smartphones in the trains. There's no resistance whatsoever to smart meters out there. I tried to go around to the various shops when I found out about their harmful health effects, and people are just not aware of it. There are no groups there like we have here, and there's very high coverage of Wi-Fi. And I was walking around the city with my meter, and I was getting much higher readings than I was in London when I first came back to the UK, which was at the end of 2017.
And your opponents, those who say this is conspiracy theory, scaremongering, this stuff is all safe, one of the things they say is that, look, you go to the World Health Organization, you go to the FCC in America, over here, everybody says that this stuff operates on levels that are not dangerous to human beings. And then they say that there is consensus. But that isn't true. You can tell me, I imagine, of academics around the world at, you know, what we would call established universities and colleges who are saying it isn't safe at all. In fact, it could be very, very damaging. So there isn't the consensus that the media would have us believe there is.
Not at all. No, there are various sites, emfscientist.org, where you've got hundreds of doctors and scientists signing a petition against the rollout of electromagnetic radiation. You've got the 5G appeal. Both of these links, you know, are on my site. And basically the health impact, this is one of the most important points to be talking about. And there's a huge, vast amount of information out there. There's a group, EMF Sussex. I went to one of their events. They can be found online. I heard about half a dozen different doctors talking about the health impact of this radiation. And then Martin Powell, who's been very vocal on 5G, Dr. Martin Powell.
Very good stuff. John's website, by the way, is 5gawareness.com. 5gawareness.com. And this coming Saturday in Oldham at 11A Church Lane, the Salt Cellar, which I believe is a lovely venue, the Salt Cellar, starting at 1:30, John will be there giving a talk and then doing a Q&A afterwards. That's The Truth About 5G by John Kitson. And tickets are available at Eventbrite. I'll put links up to this. That's Saturday, 1:30 to 4 p.m. The Salt Cellar, 11A Church Lane in Oldham. And I'm glad there are people like you doing it. And from what I know of Angie Wright and others, the great thing about this is they are getting people into these talks that wouldn't ordinarily listen to programmes like this, because that's important, John. Not preaching to the converted, but speaking to people who are completely oblivious, first of all, to this even coming, because I would imagine you meet people who, when you say 5G, they haven't a clue, right?
That's right. Yeah, they just think it's the next generation mobile phone technology. And where the battleground really is getting your average Joe, who just doesn't have a clue about this, into these venues, getting these events up and down the country. We had over 250, actually it was a sellout, our Buck Fastley event. We had 200 people there. Brilliant. In the hall. 50 people couldn't get in. We had our Totnes event, which almost had 150 people. So we need to get these up and down the country. And if anyone wants to collaborate doing an event, they can reach out to me through my site. I'm more than happy to help them organize an event. But we really need to get this going up and down the country, stress the health impact and also the financial impact on property prices. Because if there are people who maybe not bothered about their health, then maybe they'll be bothered about their property reducing in value.
It's funny you mentioned that now. Isn't that interesting? Because I've had it said to me by listeners who've got in touch with me. They've said that they fear that in more underprivileged areas, and I'm a working class boy from a working class council estate and I'm proud of it. I've had people saying to me, Richie, that's where they're going to put a lot of this stuff. People who don't really have a voice. What do you think of that, John?
I completely agree. And actually, Richie, I've been up to Gateshead and there's a lot of these antennas on the street lamps. Now, I've met a number of people. I met Mark. I went to his court case.
This is Mark Steele, right? Now, isn't it interesting? Mark was on this program and we had a very interesting discussion about this. I obviously did the due diligence, got in touch with the council, but they wouldn't come back to me, apart from putting out some notice saying that Mark was telling lies about the boxes or the antenna on the street lights. But he was able to see their claims and raise them because he put information online to show that these things were indeed on the street lights up there.
That's right. I actually went up there with my meter and I detected very high microwaves coming from the antennas on the street lights. So, and I also met a number of neighbours who know Mark personally, spoke with them, and they shared their testimonials of the nosebleeds, the headaches. And, you know, when I first met Mark, I met him at the Ian Krenz event, AV9, and I just wanted to go up there myself, you know, to see what it was about.
See with your own eyes, yeah.
Yeah, because I was aware there was some disagreement online, and I even got in touch with Ingrid Dickinson, who's the founder of BEMRI, which was the organization, this supposed survey that happened. And Ingrid said there was no survey of 5G, and anyone who represents BEMRI, they do not survey 5G or street lamps, and she can be contacted through BEMRI's website. But through the testimonials that I heard and my attendance in court, it seems there's a lot of fabrication coming from the council. And Mark, I've had interviewed Mark and Barry Trower together.
Yeah.
And Barry is totally on board that this is weapons technology that they're rolling out on our streets.
Yeah, I've known Barry for many years. Give us a brief summary of, before you do, you can have a think about it for a second, a brief summary of Mark Steele's case. Before you do that, I'm going to plug again, Saturday. And we've obviously got a lot of listeners in the Northwest. If you are not doing anything on Saturday, pop around to the Salt Cellar on Church Lane in Oldham. John Kitson will be there. It's only $4.50 to get in. All they're doing is covering the venue and covering his travel and that, I would imagine. It's important. Get somebody to go along with you who would never pay attention to independent media or anything like that and get them to listen into this. That's a Saturday, 1:30 to 4, eventbrite.co.uk. If you go to eventbrite.co.uk and look for the truth about 5G, you'll find it. You can buy a ticket in advance and there will be admission on the door. So give us a brief summary of the Mark Steele court case then with Gateshead Council.
Sure. Okay. So I first of all attended his first case with Judge Nolan, where basically there was a sort of injunction being put against him, and that the judge was actually very sympathetic to Mark. He was saying, well, Mark has his right to talk about 5G. A big bundle of evidence was given to the judge during the lunch break. And the judge's conclusion was that it was in the public interest and that Mark should still campaign. But he was under great pressure from the council to put a very minor injunction on him. The next court hearing I wasn't able to get to. I'm at the other side of the country, but I managed to get to the appeal hearing against the conviction. So there was a conviction brought against him for breaking the injunction. And I'll just briefly explain what happened there. Two councillors went to near where he lived, basically on the street where he was living. This was not their ward. And one of them was looking through Mark's window from the roadside. Mark came out, said, "What are you doing?" The councillor then said, "I'm scared, I'm scared, I'm calling the police." The police came. The police officer, the male police officer, manhandled Mark into the car. And the female police officer was interviewing Mark's neighbour. And the neighbour was explaining about the health problems they'd been getting from these street lights. The male police officer then shouted to the female police officer, "Don't talk to that woman." And then they took Mark away. Now, they played the police tape back and there was no shouting coming from Mark whatsoever. The neighbour, Debbie, also stated that Mark was not shouting when she was listening to what was going on from her window. And it looks like a massive campaign against Mark. I believe they desperately trying to shut him up. And they've got his committal hearing, which will be on May the 9th.
What was the injunction? The injunction was on what? He was forbidden to do what? To name the councillors or to speak about the nature of that police visit? What was he basically gagged on?
Okay, so it was gagging him on basically a harassment charge. He was videoing councillors. He was challenging them on 5G. And it was basically a sort of harassment charge, as far as I believe.
In the interest of being the devil's advocate now, and I had Mark on, I think this is the first radio program he did, and I liked him. I found him. I found him intelligent, articulate, and engaging. But I'm going to be the devil's advocate here now.
Sure.
Could it be that he didn't box clever? Could it be that, you know, completely motivated by his desire to find out the truth about this, that maybe he did give councillors cause for concern by following them around? I'm just putting that out there. I'm not accusing him of it. I'm just putting it out there. What do you think?
Well, you know, he's a very colourful character. He's got a very strong personality. And I think he's a very sensitive guy, you know, and he's very emotional about this. But I don't believe that it's justifiable for the council to be seeking the sort of direction they're taking in terms of punishing Mark.
Neither do I. Listen, I support everybody's right to ask questions, particularly of elected officials. I'm just making the point again, you know, covering my arse. Those councillors might say, listen, we were scared. We thought he might have, but we didn't know who he was. We didn't know what he might do. Listen, that's subjective. Like I said, I found him interesting and engaging when I had him on the programme, and I share his and your concern about the potentially devastating effects this technology will have on people, and I'm glad that people are speaking up about it. I really am, John. John Kitson is our guest. His website is 5gawareness.com. Check it out. He's in Oldham this coming Saturday. That's at the Salt Cellar Church Lane in Oldham, 1:30 to 4 p.m. eventbrite.co.uk for tickets. If you go to eventbrite.co.uk, put in 5G and its dangers, you will directly come to where you can buy a ticket for that. I've had guests on this program talking about, you mentioned Barry Troar, but I've had other people, academics as well, on this show talking about the health effects of it and how the technology works. We've done a lot of that. What can people do, John? Because I hate to be fatalistic, but I think it's just going to go up and it's going to go on. Are we almost beyond the point of trying to prevent it happening and accepting that it will happen and then trying to work from there? Or do you still think that there is work to be done and could be done that might prevent this thing from actually ending up on our streets, these transmitters? What do you think?
Yeah, I believe it's preventable. It's just ramping up the awareness. And this is absolutely important. I mean, there's a lot of great stuff going out on social media, which of course, why the censorship is coming in. But I believe literally knocking on doors. One thing I do, if anybody wants to organize an event, I've got a background in sales and networking. Another thing I worked out, I was a headhunter in Japan. I'm very sort of consistent. I'll do something again and again to get something. And that's where we went with the Buck Fastley event, where we filled it up. And I believe if there's enough people motivated up and down the country to do their own events, you can get, 2,500 leaflets done for £45, knocking on doors.
Yeah, good stuff, Mark. Yeah. Excuse me, John. Yeah.
Up and down the country, and also protecting yourself. So Wi-Fi devices in your house, get it all wired up with Ethernet cables, holding your phone away from your head, taking simple steps like that for the meantime, and just raising awareness about 5G.
That's really important, because you are going to attract inevitably to Oldham some people that are already aware of this. And that's equally good and equally frustrating for you, because they know, because they've been on 5gawareness.com. What you need them to do then is to go away. Not go away satisfied that, well, I knew all along. John Kitson is right. That's no good. You've got to get off your arse. And if it's only a few quid to get 2,500 leaflets, get them and go and knock on bloody doors.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Activism. It's no good going, great, met John Kitson, lovely. No, you've got to do something then.
Yeah, making local groups, just having your own groups and even doing your own events. That's fine. Like, we have a local group here in Totnes, where I'm living at the moment, that meet once a month. And then after the Buck Fastley event, there's an independent group that's headed up by some other chap there. And they're having their own meetings once a month about steps that they can take, action that they can take. And then the more people that are aware, the more pressure lands on those people in charge, and I think that's key.
Here's a question for you. I ask this to everybody I meet along the road, and this is the first time we've met, so I'll ask you the question. You've worked in the world, in I call it the regular world, as I have, and you've come out of it, and you're doing what you're doing. I always ask people who, get into activism over an issue like you are doing with 5G, you're a completely different person now than you were a couple of years ago, even from the time that your mother passed away. How do you deal with that kind of transformation? Because we go about in life thinking things are okay, and people are okay, and the police are okay, and politicians are okay. Then all of a sudden your world comes crashing down around you. Has that happened to you in that kind of transformative time, that time between being in Japan and being here?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, the more research I did to find out that, the world was not quite as I thought it was, and the amount of lies that were being told through the education system, through the mass media, it made me want to do something to change that system, And I think we have so much power that we don't realize. And, if we're on our deathbed looking back and thinking, what did we do to change the state of affairs, what did we do with our lives? And I just think that's extremely important, to have a mission and just to get more in touch with our heart, about doing what's right and making the world a better place, doing what we can.
Good stuff. I've had a question from a listener on Twitter. There's been quite a few tweets on this actually today. Chris asks this. It's a bizarre question. No offence whatsoever to Chris, but he asks, Richie, ask John if Japan has 7G. I wouldn't imagine it does. I've never heard of 7G. Does that mean anything to you?
No, I don't think so. I don't even think we'll get to 7G if we don't stop 5G.
Yeah. Yeah, the implications of it are that serious. Let me just scroll, because quite a few tweets came in there. David tweets, the trouble is the masses of people are oblivious to the fact that the PRC want us dead or under complete surveillance. They believe our government loves us and would never harm us. We are ice skating up a hill, says David. A lot of talk as well on Twitter about the Internet of Things and how 5G will better enable those who want to surveil us, to surveil every aspect or to survey or to watch every aspect of our lives, you know, from what we eat, what we cook, what we store in our refrigerators and whatever. It's kind of a total agenda, this, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, they're putting chips in lots of different products. I mean, we're even encouraged to chip our cats and dogs and we're fined for not doing so. It's ridiculous. And I think this is where, you know, having critical thinking comes in, not necessarily doing everything that we're told and actually research what we're doing before actually carrying this out. But yeah, I think there's a lot of things happening and we've just got to use our common sense.
Couple of tweets. There was another tweet from David, which is very interesting. I'll read it in a second. Before that, Ewan Cooper tweets, Richie, I was back in Perthshire this month and noticed a lot of new LED streetlights with 5-inch green antennas in the high streets of quite a few of the towns I drove through. It's the same in Sussex, where I live. It's all set up to go. So LED streetlights with 5-inch green antennas. Does that mean anything to you, John?
Well, what I've learned from Mark, and, you know, I don't have a technical background, but there's been this argument, you know, are these antennas 5G? Now, the main definition of 5G from what I've learned from Barry, Trower and Mark is that 5G stands for fifth generation. So it means densification. It doesn't just mean higher frequencies, but it means more of the lower frequencies. And the antennas are operating on 868 megahertz. And it's basically, yeah, you know, we're getting a Wi-Fi antenna, an antenna giving off microwaves on every single street lamp. And of course, the thing is with the antennas, 5G doesn't travel well. So my understanding of it is that if it's at this lower frequency of 868, it can then get through into our houses, whereas the higher frequencies don't travel well and they have more problems. So they have to incorporate these lower frequencies, that more of the 2G, more of the 3G, more of the 4G for 5G to ride on top of. Now, that's my, although I'm not a technical expert, that's my understanding from Mark. And I combine that with Mark and Barry from what I've learned.
Good stuff. Phil in Florida, pal of ours, asks, could John create, or somebody associated with him, a TR fold flyer? I think he means a triple fold flyer, like a letter you might get in the post, that could be downloaded and printed by listeners to hand out. That's a good question. You've got the website 5gawareness.com. I think it wouldn't be a bad idea, as Phil has suggested, for you to put a downloadable flyer there. What do you think, John?
I'll be getting that done and uploaded within the week.
Good
man.
I'll
be putting a bunch of flyers up there.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I've already got one prepared, just haven't uploaded it yet because the site's still been in development, but I'll be getting that done within the week.
Great idea. And that speaks to David's tweet, because David said, is there a way to get a science-based argument on the dangers of it out to us in layman's terms so we could print it off and get them out there? Well, that's the key to it, isn't it? Making that flyer.
You can contact me via my contact page and I can happily email him the flyer or anyone who wants to get a flyer, but I'll put it up on the site as well.
Good stuff. Operation Mockingbird on Twitter says, Richie, I suspect 5G won't be good for bees and other insects that are vital for the ecosystem. Well, we know there are massive problems with bee colony collapse in the UK because Oxford University 4 years ago said that dementia is a massive problem for bees. We speculated on this programme that that might be down to aluminium exposure and that might be down to aerosol spraying, but a lot of people don't agree with that. But of course it's not going to be good, not just for us, John, but for every other creature on this planet. Birds as well. I mean, we're surrounded. We're in South Manchester. Every bird you can think of, beautiful birds, small and large, they're going to be affected by it, surely.
Yep. Barry's talked about this at length, actually. He was stating that in 1997, experiments were carried out in Russia on 5G, on humans and animals. They caused severe neurological and physiological harm and permanent damage to the immune system, increased bacterial growth, bone and blood disorders, inflammation and enzyme damage. 5G was rolled out in Vienna more recently, and they've reported the residents have had nosebleeds, cardiac pain, vomiting, fatigue, and flu-like symptoms. But yeah, huge rise in neurological problems. Insects, trees, all of this will suffer dramatically under 5G, as it is already being affected by the current microwave radiation.
No doubt. John Kitson is our guest. Just before we let John go, it's 5gawareness.com. That's his website. He will be in Oldham this coming Saturday afternoon. That's May 4th. Great day for Star Wars fans, of course. Between 1:30 and 4:00. It's at Church Lane, 11A Church Lane in Oldham. The Salt Cellar is the venue. Only £4.50 for a ticket. Eventbrite.co.uk is where you'll find the link. I will put that exact ticket link on Twitter in a minute, and I'll pin it to the top of the page, and I'll leave it there for the duration of the programme. If you want to get it on Twitter, 1:30 to 4:00. Bring somebody with you who hasn't a clue about this and let them sit through. John will be speaking, but there will be a queue and a... there. William is in Scotland. Wildfires, John, 5G and wildfires, what do you think?
Well, yeah, that's not my area of expertise, but I wouldn't be surprised, to be quite honest. I think 5G, I mean, basically, you know, we look at microwave ovens and how they heat up food. So this microwave radiation is going to be heating us up and heating absolutely everything else up. So, you know, but yeah. I haven't looked into wildfires extensively. I've mostly been looking at the health impact on people. So that's not an area of my expertise. But Mark or Barry would be able to answer that in a more detailed manner.
Well, thanks for coming on the programme, John. I appreciate that. I enjoyed having you on. I do urge our listeners in the Northwest, or even if you're in the Northeast, if you can make it to Oldham this coming Saturday, the Salt Cellar, 1:30 to 4:00, eventbrite.co.uk. Yes, mate, go ahead, jump in there.
I was going to say, I've got my YouTube as well. It's 5G Awareness, all one word.
Brilliant. Yeah, that's right. I was on the channel today, the YouTube channel, youtube.com. Just look for 5G Awareness, all one word. You'll find the channel. Subscribe to it there. 11A Church Lane, this coming Saturday, 1:30 to 4:00. The Truth About 5G by John Kitson. I'm going to put the link on Twitter this minute, and I'll pin it to the top of my Twitter page. All the best, John. Good luck with the event on Saturday, and I'm sure we'll speak again in the near future. Thanks for your company today.
Definitely. Thank you so much for having me on the show, Richie.
Enjoyed it. Thanks, John. Very important stuff, this. That was John Kitson there. The Truth About 5G. I'm going to say it again. Saturday, the Salt Cellar, Oldham, 1:30 to 4:00 p.m. All the details at eventbrite.co.uk for tickets. But I'm sure you'll get in. If you don't manage to grab a ticket, I'm sure you'll get in on the door on Saturday there. Thanks to Angie Wright, who's based in the northwest of the country. In fact, Angie is a Mancunian. She's a Manc. I'm not sure if she's red or blue, but she's a Manc. And Angie's involved in putting on these events up here. I like it. I like these events. You're not asking people for an arm and a leg. You're not screwing them to the wall, asking them for a lot of money. And what you're asking people to do then is take the information that you've gleaned and take it out to your neighbourhood. Okay, so you put a letter in somebody's letterbox and they might think that you're stark raving mad. They might think you're a lunatic. Fair enough. Three doors down or four doors down, somebody might think, well, hang on a second, this is very interesting. I'm going to look into this a bit further. Don't forget, in Belgium earlier this month, the Environment Minister, Céline Vermaelte, halted a pilot project, a pilot rollout of this in Brussels. She said she's not convinced that it's healthy and that, I quote, the people of Brussels are not guinea pigs whose health that I can sell at a profit. We cannot leave anything to doubt, she said there. Some of you might say it's amazing she's still in a job. It is amazing she's still in a job. This is the Richie Allen Show. Maria Heller joins me in a few minutes. This is The Who, back in three. Music from The Who on the Richie Allen Show. That substitute, love that, love that. It is exactly 2.5 minutes past the hour. We're live. I'm live. Are you live? Are you alive? It is Monday, April 29th, 2019. Monday's programme. Lana Lochteff joining the show later in the week, I think. Tomorrow, Mark Windows joins us later on. Sharon Gale a special woman will be on the programme with me this week as well. I've got to tie down a time with Sharon. She's probably, I don't know if she is listening, she might not be listening, but if she is listening, she'll be shaking her head saying, why didn't you get back to me? We'll sort it out in the next few hours. Sharon will be with us this week as well. Lots happening on The Richie Allen Show. Before we go any further, let's head over to FSN to get the latest headlines. Has anything changed?
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. The governing Spanish Socialist Workers' Party has won the country's third election in 4 years, but has failed to win a majority. Sri Lanka's banned people from covering their faces in public following the Easter Sunday suicide bombings, which claimed more than 250 lives. Czech international footballer Josef Sorral has died after a bus carrying him and several teammates crashed. And Mick Jagger's Rolling Stones bandmates say the singer is doing well after surgery this month.
Yes, we love the Rolling Stones and Mick Jagger. Get well, Mick. Good stuff. I don't know how well he's going to get, though, if he's being sent songs by Ronnie Wood and Keith Richards on his hospital bed. Might be best not to do that. This is your Richie Allen Show. You are welcome to it. Keep the tweets coming in. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Maria Heller next. Yes, Maria Heller next after this.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
Indeed, I had a very interesting conversation with my friend Hayden Hewitt today as well. Got a big month coming up over the next 4 weeks. I might as well mention now that the we're moving house very soon, Caroline and myself. That's my other half, my much better half. In the next 2.5 to 3 weeks, we're going to move house. We've been in this house for the best part of 5 years, and we've been very happy here. But we're moving on to elsewhere in Greater Manchester. So we're still be based in Greater Manchester. But it's going to be a bit of a pain in the arse for about a week. So my week spring break that I normally take in the spring, I'm going to take that so that we can move. I've already been speaking to the wonderful Paul Ripley from Fab Radio, and he's going to help with the building of the studio, or the rebuilding of it in the new premises. So that's going to be going on in the next few weeks. So a lot going on. I'll keep you posted about that. A lot happening in our lives. But it's all good. So, yeah, I've been speaking about Hayden Hewitt. When that is done, when we are settled in our new digs, I will be returning to live television presenting, and it will be Thursday's Richie Allen Show will be a live television programme, okay? And it will feature an interview with a live television guest every week. That will be done through TriggerWarning.tv. I'm looking forward to that because I do miss that. I miss the camaraderie of Hayden, not so much Graham Booth, what a little twerp he is, but I do miss the camaraderie of Hayden, and I'm looking forward to picking that up again. I suppose I'll have to face Graham, won't I, one way or the other. Let's welcome back to the programme a brilliant broadcaster and journalist. There are few like her in the world. She is responsible for the oldest podcast on the internet. I always introduce her that way because it's a pretty cool thing to be able to say. She's been on the web for nearly 20 years with an extraordinary program. You can find it at Maria, that's M-E-R-I-A, Maria.net. It is brilliant. Listen to it. If you think it's worth listening to, as I do, support it. Let's welcome her back to the programme. Maria, welcome back. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing, Richie? Good to be back. Good to see you back, and good to see you feeling healthy and strong.
Well, thanks very much, Maria. Thanks. I love you, and I love having you on, and I'm touched that you would say that. And I'm also delighted that you're on today, because today they are meeting in Parliament. When I say they, members of Parliament are meeting here to discuss. Let me just bring it up there now, because I can sense a rant coming from the woman Heller. So I'm going to read this now, and I'm going to get out of your way. But this is a big story. They're debating. A committee was set up to look into the impact of online abuse, especially on people with disabilities. And there have been calls to criminalise online abuse, name-calling and stuff like that. Now, I believe that governments and and officials couldn't care less about people with disabilities and vulnerable people. What they really want to do is to pave the way to silence, to block, to cancel or to delete, well, people like yourself. What a day to be talking about this, because today you've been kicked off Twitter.
Well, and it's interesting because I saw a post today that Donald Trump said that he doesn't like the Photoshop pictures of him, like they have some with him carrying a torch in front of the white supremacists. And he thinks that people that Photoshop pictures of him should get a year in jail.
A year in jail.
Right. So this is the kind of world we're living in. And, you know, I did promote that I was coming on your show today, and I did let everybody know not only was I permanently banned from Twitter, but I also posted my reply to Twitter. And all of a sudden, now they're going to look into it. I'm not holding my breath, but I did tease the audience by saying, because everybody's like, what did you say? What did you say? In actuality, it was one of my most mildest comments ever. I'm surprised that I didn't get kicked off before, but do you want to know the big evil thing that I did, Richie?
What did you do?
There was an article on Twitter about Donald Trump giving Tiger Woods the Medal of Freedom.
Yeah.
And you know, to me, that's ridiculous. Okay,
ludicrous,
for what?
Yeah.
An elitist sport? He gets the Medal of Freedom? Yeah. But all I wrote there, and it wasn't even curse words, I just wrote simply, from one whore master to another.
Fair enough. It's
and that's
true.
All it took.
but it's true, isn't it?
And it's true. What's wrong with using the word whoremaster? Was it beyond their comprehension of the English language?
Yeah, I've become very good at typing quickly. The Oxford Concise has the word whoremaster within it. It is a widely used term. Tiger was, at least, we don't know if he is, he might be, but he was a whore master. And there's no doubt that Donald Trump has been, and probably still is, a whore master. So your account was basically stopped or suspended.
Well, no, they said it was permanently suspended. I got that this morning. I've been suspended since the 16th and constantly writing them. You know, where's your result? So this morning when they sent me their bullcrap thing that it's against their rules to promote violence or threaten other people on the basis of race, et cetera, which I never do.
Which you haven't done.
I'm not a racist.
No.
I love everybody equally and hate everybody equally. but my answer to them, that was a quote by W.C. Fields. My answer to them was, if you don't mind, I'll read it. It's pretty short. I said, I find this decision quite unfair. Your CEO met with Trump, who does this every day, yet he keeps his account when many people have been killed because of his threats and inciting violence. I'm sorry I promoted Twitter as much as I did on my show and surely won't be doing that anymore. I think you should reconsider the First Amendment and restore my account. And sad to see you were part of the destruction of our country by allowing Trump's hatred daily, but not free speech from true patriots to speak their piece.
Yeah, let's have consistency. I don't want Donald Trump to be banned from Twitter, no more than you probably want him to be banned, even though you, of course, oppose, as I oppose, what Trump represents. Let him, let everybody see what he is and what sort of a person he is through his tweeting of things, you know, threatening countries with war and destruction and economic devastation as he does Venezuela and all the rest of it. And yeah, there's got to be consistency. Didn't this Jack character, which makes me laugh, this Jack that represents Twitter, I'm so uninformed when it comes to social media companies. I don't know anything about them. But Trump met with this Jack, who apparently is the public face of Twitter. Is that right?
He met with the CEO.
The CEO,
of Twitter,
right. Okay.
Because he was upset that they took off something like 5,000 accounts on Donald Trump's Twitter feed as fake accounts because he tried to explain to the moron in chief that they were bots and fake accounts. But I think what really bothers him is that Obama has triple the amount of followers on Twitter than Trump has.
Ah, so Trump is saying that I'm being shadow banned?
Exactly.
You're having a laugh. Because I don't know, but I'm guessing he's got 40, 50, 60, 70 million followers, I'm guessing.
I think he had something like, I want to say 49 versus Obama, maybe at 116 million. So anything, you know, he is so jealous of Obama. I mean, he spits it out of his mouth every day that it's sickening to me.
Yeah, it's a penis size issue, isn't it? Let's be honest.
Right, but I mean, when Trump gets on there and he riles up his base and he says the ridiculous things about, you know, doctors and mothers conspiring after a child is born to execute it, encouraging all these hate crimes and white supremacists. I mean, journalists around the world see that Trump has started a lot of this. This isn't something that I make up.
No.
And, you know, even his term fake news, how many other dictators are now using that? So it's like we have the craziest person in the world setting the tone for the rest of the crazy people in the world. And it all comes down to worldwide fascism being locked into place.
Do you know, you and I, over the years we've known each other, we've never had an... Let's have an argument, me and you. I'd love to have an argument with you.
Okay.
I don't imagine I'll win, but I'll have a go anyway. He didn't coin the term fake news, though, did he? The thing that intrigues me about Trump is, woeful as the man is, he's just a mouthpiece for far darker, even more sinister people behind him. That's the thing.
And he's a useful idiot to them.
Yeah.
You know, he continues to obstruct justice in this country. He's put everybody in place in every department of this government to destroy the departments that he's, you know, putting them in. He's refusing to follow the Constitution. His attorney general is a joke. And it's an amazing thing. Listen, Richie, for many years in my teaching, when I was out busy, you know, actually teaching things that mattered, like, you know, spirituality and how we're all interconnected, I often said the United States was founded by genocide and can only end the same way.
Yeah, that's right. We've had this conversation before. I've not sought to give him or any other politician a pass, no more than you've ever done. But I genuinely believe this, and this is where you're going to shoot me down and have a go at me, and that's going to be good. I genuinely believe that when he was going around the country in early 2016, he meant this stuff he was saying about pulling away from wars for profit overseas and interventionism. I think when he met Andy Wakefield, I think he meant that he genuinely believed that there were problems with vaccines and there were genuine questions to be asked. I really do believe that, Maria. I'm not saying he's a nice person or a good guy. Listen, you and I have spoken about sexual proclivities, the stuff about his daughter. This is some dark stuff. The beauty pageants, don't get me started there. I could be here all night. Look, this is not a bright human being. This is a dark person. But I believe on the campaign trail he meant all the good stuff that he said. No, I didn't believe him for a minute. Or I didn't believe it would ever come to pass. But I think he might have believed it. What do you think?
Well, you know, Richie, I've unfortunately had a lot of experience in my life. And I would like your listeners to know, first of all, I feel bad for your listeners that hate me because they won't be able to post that hatred of me on Twitter today.
Nobody hates you here.
So I apologize to them. But, you know, unfortunately, I've had a lot of experiences through my life with what I call pathological liars. And the truth of the matter is they truly do mean it when they say it. And then the thought is gone.
Right.
So unless you understand how a pathological liar creates their own reality, you might believe, you know, listen, so many people, even people I used to respect, emphasis on the word used to, past tense.
Yeah.
Actually believed that Trump was going to reopen the 9/11 investigation.
I know.
That was another one of his promises. And I laughed at that. And
yeah.
I was like, are you kidding? And you're going to believe this liar? I mean, listen, I grew up in New York at the same time he did. We're almost the same age.
Yeah.
We all knew what he was.
This is my conspiracy theory, though, Maria. I can't argue with you. I want to argue with you, but I can't. You're right, but this is my theory. My theory is intelligence and common sense obviously are two different things. I don't think that Trump is necessarily stupid. I don't believe that. I believe he's, you know, capable of reasonable thought. I would say he's probably of average intelligence. I think he didn't imagine he would win.
Oh, he had no idea he was going to win. He ran basically to promote his brand.
Yeah, brand Trump, and he would lose, and then he would become this great Fox News regular personality, and he would build his brand as an outspoken, you know, alternative right celebrity type figure. But I genuinely believe, and again, this is where the conspiracy comes in, when Trump talked about 9/11, I think he meant it. I think, like everybody else, he looked at the towers and he went, Jesus, there's something very wrong there. I think he meant that. I think when he looked at vaccines and the injuries, I think he meant it. Now, this is where it gets conspiratorial. I also think that when he won the election, at that point, he was taken into the dark room, as some great American comedians have talked about over the years, of course, the great Carlin and Bill Hicks and others, and was maybe not shown the Zapruder film, maybe not, but he was shown evidence that could be used against him, evidence of his own weaknesses over the years with girls and what have you. And at that point, he's told, right, you're the president, Donald. All that stuff you talked about, forget about it. That's my theory. I'm not trying to say he's a nice guy. I'm saying that's my theory. What do you think?
Well, there's something we might need to disagree on. I don't think he's ever meant anything he said in his entire life. Ask any of his wives, ask any of his business people that he's stiffed and hasn't paid. He even made a deal with North Korea to release Otto Warmbier for $2 million and didn't pay him either.
Right.
So, I mean, did they actually trust that he was going to do that? Remember, his father gave him $413 million and he pretty much failed at every single business that he tried with his father's money. There are some psychiatrists that have said that he shows a lot of signs of a man having untreated syphilis. You know, some people say dementia. I think that he's just a complete sociopath and his whatever mind he had is gone. So maybe he was knocked out of his body by some demon from hell.
Maybe,
but
yeah.
Meanwhile, we're all stuck with it.
Well, we are. And I think you and I agree. It wouldn't matter whether we were stuck with him or the evil entity that is Hillary Clinton. Or, God forgive me, and you can kill me for saying this, I don't think Bernie Sanders is evil, far from it. But Bernie's a social democrat. Nothing would happen on Bernie's watch that would be any good for anybody either. You might get maybe, you know, for a short time, you might get a retreat from intervention overseas, but nothing would ultimately change. That's what I think, you know, and I've come to reluctantly believe that. But I have been interested in watching people like Tulsi Gabbard, for example, the Hawaiian congresswoman. What do you make of her? Last time you were on, I wanted to get into this. I wanted to throw a few names at you, my friend. People like Tulsi Gabbard. See what you think of people like her.
Well, to tell you the truth, we got 20 people now running in the for the Democratic ticket. 20. I decided that I'm not going to cover the majority of them till I know which one has the nomination because I don't want to do that work anymore. Because it's always bullshit. We don't get to pick the candidates.
No.
This is something Americans don't want to understand. And the way the DNC shortchanged Bernie the last time is the reason we have Trump in office.
Well, that's a scandal, isn't it? I mean, we don't talk about that often enough. I mean, he won the nomination. He effectively should have been the Democratic nominee, but he was hoodwinked out of it by the aforementioned evil.
I think he was threatened out of it. I don't think he was hoodwinked. I remember that the story where he was visited by two suits in his hotel, and the next day when he gave Hillary the nomination, he had bruises on his face. Listen, this could just be a coincidence, but he was so angry when he gave that to Hillary. So, you know, listen, years ago, one of my best co-hosts, who was also murdered by the powers that be, Dave McGowan, the first time I had Dave on my show was about 19 years ago. And he had said that what we need in America is a form of democratic socialism. Right now, the only socialism we have is for corporations and multimillionaires.
Yeah.
And I watch people all day long. You know, listen, I have friends here, you know, they're working three, four jobs and barely getting by. So when they talk about how great the economy's doing, what they don't mention is that 84% of Americans are not in the stock market. And they judge our economy by how well the stock market's doing. But the regular guy on the street making 10 bucks an hour, if he's lucky, is really struggling. So I say, let's pull all that money and tax breaks away from the corporations and the super rich and pay people a decent living wage, which should be no less than $25 an hour.
Yeah, and stop spending trillions on manufacturing weapons and stuff. This is good stuff. Maria Heller is our guest. Patricia tweets, Trump mightn't be stupid, but he is clever enough to know what to say to promote himself. He is, without a doubt, a narcissist. And that combined with a pathological liar is a dangerous combination. You see, I would agree with Patricia, a mutual friend of ours, but I would also disagree with her. He is all of that stuff, but that's why he was chosen. Because the easiest person in the world to manipulate is a narcissist. Because
absolutely.
Isn't that true?
Well, and the, you know, listen, this guy's making money hand over fist as president. And then, you know, they changed the emoluments clause to allow him to make money at his hotel. What kind of crap is this? If this was any other president, that would never happen. This morning I saw an article, believe it or not, here's a Ripley's believe it or not for you, Richie.
Go on.
He's made, his campaign has made to date $45 million on his hats.
No way.
His Make America Hate Again hats. $45 million just there. Over $100 million just for his golf. That's going to his personal businesses. So when people say, oh, he donates his salary, come on, the salary of the U.S. president is a joke compared to how much he's ripping us off.
What is it? It's about, I would guess it's about $250,000 a year, is it, or something like that?
Well, I think they raised it to 400. You know, I mean to look it up and I never do.
Yeah.
But what's that? That's a drop in the bucket to these criminals. And you talked about 9/11. He came out with so many lies immediately after 9/11. He basically stole $150,000 for supposed damages that never happened to his building or his businesses on and from the 9/11 fund. He claimed that he watched the people, the Muslims cheering on 9/11. That wasn't true. He claimed he was there on the ground helping people. That wasn't true. And I think Kellyanne Conway's husband this morning came out with the fact he congratulated Trump for his 10,000th lie since he started his campaign. 10,000 lies.
Only 10,000. I'm surprised.
Well,
that.
That's the ones I guess that we
as
hear.
As you can count.
You know?
Let me just, Maria Heller is our guest. Go to maria.net. Terrific broadcaster. Always well researched and well briefed is Maria. Loads of comments on this, unsurprisingly. Ad hominem tweets, don't forget his blatant Rothschild connections. Who cares about Stormy Daniels, for example? Mark Richards tweets, if Trump failed at business, how is he a billionaire? As far as I understand it, Maria.
He's not. As far as we know, he's not. Every one of his, even his own personal biographer said that he lies about how much money he has. Why do you think he doesn't want his financial records shown? Even Michael Cohen, his ex-fixer, said that he inflated his worth even to Deutsche Bank to get loans when no American bank would lend to him. And now Deutsche Bank is finally handing over his financial records to Congress. So he didn't want, remember in the beginning, he said that's a red line on the Mueller report, because he knows once they open up his finances or his tax returns, he's going to be exposed for the lying cheat that he is.
Yeah.
So, you know, but now he's got a personal attorney as attorney general who's defending him and refusing to testify. So, you know, America's in deep shit right now. And most Americans who aren't aware with the way our government works have no idea just how serious the situation is.
Absolutely. Look, he, in the again, in the interest, there will be people listening to this program who support him and they believe that he's in some fantasy power struggle with the deep state, that he's some sort of undercover agent and all this. And they do believe this. And I don't want to laugh at people because I don't know everything. I'd love to be proved wrong. I'd love in 2 years' time for Trump to come out and say, the last 30, 40 years I've been masquerading as a property magnate, when what I've really been doing is taking down the deep state. But he's not, you know. He's now behind power.
He is the deep state.
He is the deep state.
He's part of it. He had a rally this week because he's too chicken to go to the White House correspondence dinners. You know, he can only dish it out. He can't take it. So he had one of his Hitler rallies. And at his Hitler rally, he actually called the FBI scum. Now, if he wasn't part of the deep state and the FBI was, why would he still be alive? They, you know, the Secret Service took out Kennedy. Why is this guy still alive if he's not part of it?
Well, he's doing exactly what we would call the hidden hand want to do. He's, in fact, he's inspiring more and more conflict overseas. You know, his support of the embassy in Jerusalem. This thing about rape in war. I mean, this is just mad stuff, you know.
I know. And, you know, you talk about Bernie Sanders, but out of all the 20, Bernie's the only one that's taking on Netanyahu and his genocidal racist country. And yet, when Bernie gave that speech, no one saw it and nobody commented on it. But I actually did, because those are the stories I look for my news shows. You see all the rest of the front runners, you know, they're all, we love Israel. So, you know, what's going to change?
And again,
you know, outside of the few women that got elected into the House, you know, like Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib and the rest of them that are being constantly demonized, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, they are the only hope I see in the Democratic Party. All the rest of them, you know, pretty much, I hate to say it, they're all part of the same situation.
Well, they are. These women you mentioned having a snowball's chance in hell of ever getting further than Congress. And if any of them are really serious about their opposition to the Zionist influence in DC, and I think Omar might be, she'll eventually go the way of Cynthia McKinney. She'll be destroyed.
Well, but you got to look at Trump, how he attacks these women on Twitter, how many death threats they get, how much more bodyguards they need. How come Trump's account is still there? You know, every shooter from New Zealand to this recent synagogue shooter has the, you know, it's amazing how they all seem to have a manifesto, but they all refer in one way or another to something Trump has said.
I know,
if people don't believe me, there's a great article this morning on World Socialist website exactly saying the same thing I'm saying.
I know
that Trump incites most of this.
I know that Morning Star and other publications on the left would agree with you, but I'm a stickler for this. People are responsible for their own actions and for their own thoughts. And while all that crap that you get from the alt-right and the far-right, and look, we see it, it's encroached upon the independent media. Do you know what makes me laugh about the independent media? First of all, there's really no such thing. There are presenters and producers, present company, you being one of them, who work alone and who try to present a different take on things. And you present different points of view and you give a platform to people who wouldn't ordinarily get it. That's genuine. But by and large, there's no such thing as the independent or alternative media. What you have is a gold rush. I'm seeing it right now. What you've got at the moment is you've got people popping up all over the place on YouTube, calling themselves truth tellers and truth seekers. And what they're doing basically is talking about the Kalergi plan and mass immigration and multiculturalism and our culture is being erased and all of that old bullshit. Now, some of what they're saying is actually true. However, people like you and me have been discussing it for years and years and years. But they're doing it as a means to engineer and to generate money for themselves.
Right.
They are telling
The best way for people to know whether they're really independent media or not is their rollout. What's interesting to me, I've watched more so, I would say, over the past 5 years, all of a sudden these alternative or independent media, they roll out. And when they roll out, Richie, they roll out with the most expensive studios, the most expensive video, this, that, the other thing. They roll out just like a TV production. I don't know about you, but I've been doing my show for, well, July starts my 20th year. I'm still not rolling out in the big box. So when I see something like that, I say,
where's
how
it
could
coming
they be
from?
Real if they have all that money behind them?
Yeah, and look, to finish the earlier point I was making, despite all of that and despite how much of that, a lot of it has been inspired by, you know, the idiots on the alt-right and the idiots on the far left as well. A lot of it has been inspired. I just don't want to accept, maybe that's the best way of putting it, because I might be wrong. I don't think that any man should be blamed for the actions of another, even if he is spouting hateful anti-Muslim stuff or anti-anybody else stuff. People are still
saying that when Jim Jones told his cult to drink the Kool-Aid and they drank it, that he wasn't responsible.
He was, but there's an obvious difference there, isn't there?
I don't know. I'm just waiting for somebody to do a fundraiser for the Kool-Aid. I'll chip in.
Yeah, look, what Jim Jones was doing was Jim Jones had a very direct, intimate, very personal face-to-face relationship with people. And we saw that. And it's interesting you bring that up. Trump has got followers around the world, people he's never met, people he's not responsible for.
Because we live on a planet of idiots where you take a reality TV star and you make him president. And everybody is just, oh, my God, he's my favorite reality TV star. But this is a horrific reality TV show for the average American.
It is,
they
but we can't
know
blame
how bad
him.
It's about to get.
And I agree with you, but I don't think we can blame him for New Zealand. He doesn't have any responsibility for that. And I know you'll disagree with this, and I won't interrupt you, but I think it's a terribly dangerous place to go to say
Listen,
that his
I was
racism.
I was thinking about that myself. Yeah. And I went back and, you know, I have a lot of conversations with myself because I live in the quiet and I actually allow myself to think. And when I look at the whipping up of hatred with all these different religions, you know, bombing synagogues, bombing Muslims, burning churches. I mean, there's like no end to it. And I look at especially the Christian versus the Muslim thing going on. And as much as I'd like to blame it on Trump, as I was having a conversation with myself yesterday, I realized and remembered 9/11 was the tipping point for the Islamophobia in America.
Absolutely.
And 9/11 was based on nothing but lies,
100%.
The official story. So if we were going to blame anybody, I remember when George W. Bush was speaking to the president of France at the time, he actually said, this is the war of Gog and Magog. I don't know if you remember that.
I do. Richard. I remember it well.
So you have to look at, you know, the president of France at the time thought that Trump was insane. I mean, Bush was insane, which, of course, he had a touch of that, too. And then you look at who Trump's got in office now, especially Mike Pompeo, who's waiting for the rapture. You know, Mike Pence, who thinks anybody except his brand of Christianity should be gone.
Yeah.
Trying to set up biblical rule in America, which is something I warned my audience about 19 years ago, and now it's happening. So you look at this, and you know what? It all goes down to religion. You know, the Christians think they're better than this group. This group thinks they're better than that group. Oh, you're an anti-Semite. Oh, they hit a synagogue. Oh, they hit three black churches. And on another level, I think to myself, maybe people are getting fed up with religion, and maybe this is the way religion ends on this planet.
I think you're right. It's identity politics. The sad thing is, as they move away from religion, they're not self-aware enough to understand that they are leaving one negative identity group and they're moving into another. So they go to the alt-right, they go to the far left, they go to Antifa, they go here, they go there. You've made
The two biggest systems of control on this planet since the planet began has been religion and politics.
Well, you know, Maria, you bring up, I think it's vital what you're bringing up. Adam Curtis made a series of films for the BBC, which were never shown in the United States of America. They were purchased by HBO. HBO then gave them to PBS, and they never aired. And it's a documentary series he made for the BBC called The Power of Nightmares. And it was marvellous. The film was about the rise of the Islamic right and the rise of the Christian right. And he talks in the films, which I think you might have seen, he talks about how Islam and the threat of Islamic terror was used by our politicians as the phantom enemy after the collapse of the Berlin Wall and the death of communist Russia and the threat that we had lived with for 40, 50 years. It's one of the best documentary series ever made. Curtis doesn't go maybe far enough in it, but he's right on the money. Radical Islam, which nobody denies does exist in small pockets around the world, obviously in Saudi Arabia. We do have elements of it here in the UK. We do. You know, Tommy Robinson is a goon, a worthless goon, but there are elements of the truth in what he says. There are young...
Well, look how that was used after 9/11.
Exactly.
To demonize the Muslims in America, where now today Muslims in America have to live in fear. And for what? For the project of New American Century neocons war that was based on nothing but lies? And if indeed, and this is another reminder for the world and those who might still think, you know, Trump is a great guy, if indeed 14 of the supposed 19 hijackers were from Saudi Arabia, why is Trump in bed with Saudi Arabia? Why is he giving them nuclear secrets? Why is he opening, you know, his son opening another golf course on our tax dollars in Dubai?
Because he was told
Why is he okay with Saudi Arabia, you know, sawboning Jamil Khashoggi, beheading 37 people that spoke against the government.
And crucifying one of them.
And it's disgusting. And he's in bed with every dictator in the world from, you know, Kim Jong-un, and he loves Duterte in the Philippines because that's basically what he'd like to do to us.
But you know what, Maria?
He wants to be a strong-armed guy, but he's a weak coward.
But you know what? You keep saying Trump is doing this in Saudi Arabia. And I know you know this, and I'm not having a go at you at all. It isn't him, though. It's what he's being told to do. You know, this is the thing. These aren't Trump policies. These are directions given to him either verbally or subliminally. This guy is just the guy that's delighted to be the president and tweeting at 2 o'clock in the morning, abusing people with disabilities, laughing at women.
Right.
This is a moron. What he's doing isn't his own...
His son-in-law, who shouldn't have a security clearance, is best friends with Mohammed bin Salman. He's in bed with Benjamin Netanyahu. I mean, how can people not see the hand of Saudi Arabia, Russia, and Israel on this presidency and against our throats in the United States?
That's right. But we've been engineered to become so polarized.
I know everybody just wants to listen. Most people talk. I hate to say it. My mother used to use an expression. He's talking out of both sides of his ass.
Yeah, absolutely.
But imagine if people actually did the homework. You know how many times I'll make a post on Facebook or something. People say, well, do you have a chart for that? Do you know where I can find that? It only takes 30 seconds to Google anything today.
It does. And this is for me, I've talked about maybe this year, 2019, maybe being my last year doing this, and then I might go and do something else for my health, and not for my health, but for my peace of mind. And I'll tell you why. Because I don't see a way through the vast majority of people. When I say a way through them, a way to engage them and to say to them, listen, it isn't a bad thing to accept that you've been duped. It's no bad thing. We've all been duped. When we point out that Donald didn't arrest Hillary, when we point out that he dropped more bombs than Obama, when we point out that he hasn't stopped wars of intervention overseas, we're not doing that to insult you or to ridicule you. We're doing it so that you will join us in understanding that they are all a bunch of lying, warmongering whores, whether on the left or on the right. But I don't see any way. I don't see any way through people. Because we've become so polarized.
It's funny you say that, because I question myself how long I want to continue doing my show. Because every now and then your soul gets tired. I don't know how else to say it. My soul is tired. But I also have the pressure from some of my listeners who say, the day you give up your show, we'll know all is lost. So no pressure there. But But yeah, there's you lose a certain part of your sanity. And unless you're in balance, especially spiritually, I don't understand how anybody can exist on this planet without a true spiritual understanding of what's happening here.
Social media is killing us, and so are smartphones.
I agree.
That's the answer. You see, if there was no social media, if there was no narcissistic Facebook pages, narcissistic Twitter accounts, it would be much easier. In fact, you wouldn't even have to speak to the people who gave their trust to Trump. You wouldn't even have to speak to them. They would already be trying to lynch the guy. But they're not. They're entrenching themselves even further.
Because they're making money on it, just like mainstream media. They were delighted covering Trump's campaign. They're still delighted covering every crazy thing he says every day because it sells. They don't really care about informing the people of the truth. I don't know about you, but I've never seen anything close to questioning 9/11 by itself in the regular mainstream media. You just don't see it. Even late night comics make fun of anybody that tries to bring forth 9/11 truth. So if we don't get the truth of 9/11, you don't understand how fast the world moved into this fascistic Big Brother state. So to me, that's still the biggest issue that needs to be covered. And people that believe that this bloviating idiot was going to reopen 9/11, just like he promised he was going to release the rest of the papers on the Kennedy assassination, and that didn't
another
happen.
Another lie. And all you want for people to do is go, okay.
When is enough enough? When do people say every word out of his mouth is a lie, but I'm still buying it? I mean, come on, people, look in the mirror. You're smarter than that.
They're desperate because when I spoke a minute ago, I wasn't talking about the alt-right people who make money out of it. I was talking about the average Joe Soap or Josephine Soap who supported Trump and who are entrenched now and are so deeply entrenched that they either can't see that none of the manifesto has been honoured, or they can see it, but they hate the other side so much that they can't bring themselves to admit that they were duped. But admitting that you were duped and that the whole system is a lie, it's fake, it's designed to do one thing and one thing only, which is to drive all money and all power into the hands of the financial elites. When you acknowledge that and get out of this left-right paradigm, you're wrong and I'm right and all that nonsense.
Right. But just admit hard. You were wrong and say, okay, well, you know, there are some Trump supporters that are admitting they're wrong. They are putting it even on video or on Facebook that they made a mistake. They fell for his crap. It's just, I just keep waiting to see what issue is it going to take to finally make that point.
Well, the elite...
I don't know, how much more heinous does this guy have to get?
Well, it's funny, the puppet masters who control Donald Trump, if they really want to stir civil unrest, because one of my big concerns about the next couple of years, I believe that the creation of the alt-right and the creation of the far left and identity politics and the deepening, the increasing entrenching of positions, I believe that we are being manipulated for very, very serious civil unrest.
And I agree. I think they put this guy into place to create civil war in America. Remember, every now and then, the powers that be need to kill off a couple of million people because there's just too many people. So if they can get us to kill each other off, it's cheaper for them than starting another world war.
That's right. I'm convinced of it. I'm convinced we're getting little hints that that might be coming down the line. I mean, we've had a police commissioner or a police captain in New York State bringing a curfew in on people whom are not vaccinated. I mean, this is pure George Orwell, this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think these are just little baby steps to...
Right, and truthfully, come on.
Yeah.
They say, today, they said there's a big epidemic of measles in America. Okay, everybody needs to hold on to your underwear. There's 350 million people in America and they have 700 cases. So they say no one has shown any proof of these cases. Some people are actually asking now on Facebook, where do you live? Do you have any cases of measles? Because they're finding it hard to believe.
But the truth
of the matter is, if you got the vaccine, what are you worried about?
Yeah,
if your vaccine works, what are you worried about if the kid next to you doesn't have the vaccine?
It's amazing here today because today they're saying again, this has been on the agenda, the UK parliamentary agenda, for the last few weeks. Well, longer, but it's only surfaced in the last few weeks. They are saying, doctors are saying, we must mandate vaccines to protect those who can't have them. So there's a tiny, tiny percentage of the population who can't have vaccines because they've got congenital health issues or whatever. So because they can't have vaccines, everybody else should have them to protect those people from getting diseases. This is mad. These are mad times.
And Richie, there's no when opposition. I was a kid, you had three vaccines. Today, it's something like 90 vaccines by the time these kids are out of high school. We had three, okay? So it's kind of crazy when you look at it. And then I got an article this morning that said that Japan leads the way. No vaccine mandates and no MMR vaccine.
It's not on the schedule
so
in Japan.
That's Japan.
Is that right? It's not on the schedule in Japan. MMR, they don't give it there.
Right. And they don't have any vaccine mandates there either. So you look at why we have so many children with no immune systems. The rise in autism, you know, I think it's 1 out of 32 births now, which is crazy. Okay. I never in my life met anybody with autism till I was like in my 60s. Okay.
Never heard of it till I saw Rain Man, to be honest.
Exactly. And then I look at this measles going around and some of the horrific pictures they post. That's not the kind of measles I had when I was a kid.
No, I don't remember it like that at all. And
so
I do remember
that
having
that's been weaponized. You know, some of your audience may think that I'm being a conspiracy freak right now, but I think they've weaponized these childhood diseases because that doesn't look like the measles to me. Okay, all of us had the measles when we were kids.
Yeah.
You shared them with your friends so you could all get over it and have immunity.
You had a party. We had parties when we were kids.
Exactly. And, you know, when I look at what is they're calling measles and these horrific pictures they're posting, I'm like, that's not the kind of measles we had.
No, we went to parties and we got jelly. You'd say Jell-O, of course, over there, you heathen, you Philistine heller. It's jelly.
I don't like Jell-O.
No, we had jelly ice cream and the measles. That's not a joke. If two or three kids had measles, there was a party. And
right.
you made balloons, you played together, everybody got it together, you got over it together, happy days.
Exactly. But now, you know, listen, we live in a sterile world. You know, when I went down to Mexico a couple of years back, I met this Mexican doctor who, by the way, is better than most American doctors I've ever seen. And he said, the problem with Americans is everything's too sterile. And that's why you have no immune system. Your food's too sterile. This is too sterile. That's too sterile. And he's right, you know. And everybody wants to use that to anti-whatever hand wash. And now they finally, I've never used it. I forget what they call it. But now they figure out, oh, that's not good for you because it doesn't build your immune system. And then you look at all these vaccines and you look at the genetically modified food, let alone the filth they're spraying in the air. I mean, all of it contributes to our children that have already been said will not live as long as my generation and absolutely don't have the future that my generation had in the 50s and 60s.
And making them very inward looking and very, I hate to keep using the term narcissistic, but that's what it does. It makes them very self-centered, self-obsessed, prone to individualism, selfish individualism, you might say.
Well, and, you know, social media is isolating them too.
Yeah. Oh, that's all part of it, of course. And they migrate there. And it's the whole thing of, you know, there's an inflated sense of self-importance there. I'm important. What I say is important. No, I'm not saying it isn't. Everybody's right. Entitled to their opinion. But
you know what? Most of the young people I know, and I know quite a few, would talk about maybe from 18 to 20, their late 20s. None of them use social media. They text each other. They send pictures to each other. But I find it interesting that they'd rather text than speak on the phone.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Right. But, you know, Facebook, they know, is for older Americans because the children don't use it. I know my own grandchildren don't. They walked away from it a long time ago. And I think that that's a good thing. You know, they're okay with, you know, I'll put my picture up on Instagram or Snapchat. But that, to me, is more social media where it is social than, say, Twitter or Facebook, which especially Facebook just whips up hate every day.
It's an echo chamber. You end up getting back everything you give out. There isn't any debate. There's no challenge there.
Right,
you know,
it's just what topic will we throw out to whip up some hate today?
Yeah, and that, there's definitely that. I agree with that. But there's also going on Facebook, stating an opinion, and then anxiously looking out for how many likes you get for that opinion, which is feeding your ego. And then eventually you basically surround yourself only with those people who see the world the same way you do. And there isn't anything more unhealthy than that.
Listen, I know people that get absolutely manic if you don't like their posts.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really sick in the head if you think about it. To me, social media is, once my show is done, I go to the gym and I'll see 5 to 10 of my friends at the gym and we actually talk in person.
Real people. Face to face.
And listen, it's a mix, you know, it's people that agree with my politics, people that don't. It doesn't matter because we all have common ground, but we've all forgotten to go to common ground.
Well, that's right.
Say, you know, this is really a war against the majority of the human beings on this planet and the couple of hundred people that rule all of us.
Playing us all off against one another through identity politics and party politics. And it's been that way since the year dot, hasn't it, really?
I mean, I would say so. So just, you know, don't fall for it. You know, people have to remember who they are.
People need to lose. They need to lose whataboutery. So you tell them, listen, this Trump guy is not what he told you. Oh, so you're a Clinton. No, I'm not. Far from it.
I don't know if you heard, but I posted it yesterday because I got news that Anthony Hilder died. And Anthony Hilder, he was around. He was probably one of the biggest conspiracy, the first ones. He was, died, I think he was 84. But he was before Bill, God, I can't remember his last name, the guy who wrote Behold the Pale Horse. He was the first one to, you know, expose the Bilderbergs and this and that. And I see it was a great loss. I don't know, Rich, are you still there? I think we got cut off.
No, I'm listening intently to you. Yeah,
okay.
I am. Yeah,
my
yeah.
My computer got so quiet, and I thought I was in my Prius.
No, it's just me listening. Yeah, I didn't realize Anthony Hilder.
Well, you know, when I saw the name, because I've done my show for so long, and I mean, literally, I probably have done about 6,000 shows. So sometimes I forget who I even had on my show.
Yeah, of course you would.
So I put his name in my search engine on my own site this morning, and I did have a great interview with him in March of 2012. So if anybody wants to listen to that, I posted it on my front page. And, you know, for people that say, oh, you're Trump, 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 we ripped on Obama pretty good in that show just from the description that I wrote there.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I can't cover all of them, but I will tell you, never in my life did I think I'd cover anything worse than George W. Bush, but here we are.
Of course, and it'll get progressively worse because as time goes on, the agenda is increasingly more difficult for them to hide. And this is the problem. And
they're being exposed. My question is, will they be exposed quick enough?
That's
before
right.
Before it's too late.
Well, this is why Trump is a reaction to that. Because people were waking up to the notion or to the idea, the realization that the whole thing is a sham. Trump was given to us to re-engage people in politics. I really believe that's one of the reasons.
Us, that's for sure.
That's right. And, you know, all those people who follow him were, many of them were people that were tired of the lies. They were destroyed by Obama. They celebrated him.
Right.
When, you know,
they want to believe. They wanted to believe.
Exactly.
Listen, there's no savior. People got to get over this whole savior, somebody coming to save us. I don't care if you think it's going to be aliens or God or whatever. There is no savior.
No, you're the answer. You're the answer. That's it, by the way, for today. We've got to wrap it up there. Do check out, if you haven't checked Maria's programs out before, go to maria.net, M-E-R-I-A. Now, check out that Anthony Hilder interview from a few years ago that Maria mentioned. They're truly independent, completely unique take on geopolitical events, And we're all the better. The world is all the better for having you in it, Maria. I mean that. Thanks for coming back today.
Thank you, Richie. And thanks again for having me back on your show. And all I can tell people is, remember, you're the one we've been waiting for. We're it.
Absolutely. Listen, we'll do it again in a couple of months' time, if not before then. Great to have you back, Maria.
Look forward to it.
Can't wait. Speak soon. That was the great Maria Heller. Live on The Richie Allen Show. That wraps it up. Check Maria, MERIA.net, if you haven't before. Bookmark her site. Listen to her interviews. It's a different take on things, as I said, completely unique and brilliant. The oldest podcast on the net, still going strong. As I think she said, approaching the 20th year of broadcasting. Brilliant stuff, Maria Heller. Right, we're out of here. Should be joined by Lana Lochte from Red Ice Radio tomorrow. Later in the week, Mark Windows. Plenty more coming up this week as well. I must say, of course, before I do go, big thanks to John Kitson for coming on the programme in the first hour. Go to eventbrite.co.uk. He's in Oldham on Saturday. And I've put a link to it on Twitter. My Twitter page is at the top of the page to where you can get the tickets. The truth about 5G. John Kitson in Oldham on Saturday from 1:30 to 4 p.m. Going out with Dire Straits and the Sultans of Swing on your Richie Allen Show. Until tomorrow at 5 p.m. the usual time, of course. It's goodbye for me. See ya.